Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When I say classical composer, you may think of some old, probably dead guys who wrote piano concertos. You might not expect a 20-something guy who wrote a piano concerto inspired by fast cars and keeps a blog and lists Brian Eno among his musical heroes. Meet Timo Andrus, the pianist and composer whose new album, Homestretch, features this automotive-inspired concerto, as well as recompositions of works by Eno and by Mozart. We'll find out what he means by recomposition in a moment, but first, Timo Andrus is here to play an excerpt from his recomposition of Mozart's Coronation Concerto, live on Soundcheck. That is Timo Andrus, live at our piano with his cadenza from the Coronation Concerto Recomposed. Originally music by Mozart, but now recomposed, whatever that means, by Timo Andrus. Showing off here in the studio.
Well, that's sort of the point of a cadenza, I guess.
That's a good definition.
Originally compositionally as well as technically, of course. Mm-hmm.
So in a piano concerto, for folks who don't, you know, are not like classical music buffs, it's mostly composed, but towards the end of each part, there's a space left for the pianist to go
Correct.
Wild.
It's like a little solo improv,
yeah.
Break.
Yeah.
And everything stops. And what's fun for me about writing cadenzas is that you're sort of freed from all of the compositional hang-ups that are with you when you're writing a totally contained piece.
Mm-hmm.
All the material already exists because you take themes from the piece and sort of rework them and vary them. And you don't have to worry about form because the form is already there. You just kind of go crazy for, you know, anywhere from 2 to, I don't know. There's some pretty big cadenzas out there. So it's really just like a get-out-of-jail-free card for a composer.
So Mozart wrote this piano concerto, the Coronation Concerto, which is 26th out of 27. What does it mean when you come along and do a recomposition of it?
So recomposition is kind of just a word that we fell into using because we didn't quite know what to call this thing. In this case, Mozart didn't write down most of the left-hand part of the concerto.
Simply because he would have been the performer himself and
right,
knew
right, right.
what he expected.
Probably had the whole thing in his head
right.
and didn't have time to write it down. And as such, it's a little bit of an odd man out with in the piano concertos. Not a lot of people play it. And when you do hear it, it's been completed by an editor of some sort in, you know, Mozart's general style.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always found it a little bit dull as a result. And so I filled in the entire left-hand part with new music, my own music.
Uh-huh.
And it takes a number of tactics. Sometimes it really subverts the Mozart. Sometimes it plays along with it, but not in the way that you might expect.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a long tradition of this in classical music, of one composer sort of reimagining the music of especially an earlier composer.
It's true. And it's always something I really like is when listening to a piece of music of in any genre, really, you can really hear the music that person loves and respects, even if it's not outright identified. It always seems to me more disingenuous to say, like, oh, this is my original idea that just came out of nowhere and it's indebted to nobody. I always love to hear people's influences right on the surface.
Yeah. So you call it a recomposition. Could you have just as easily called it a cover? Are you covering Mozart here?
Well, in a sense, any performance of a classical work is a cover in the way that we think of it. I mean, classical music, one of the things I love about classical music is that it's very much about the interpretation.
It
regards interpretation as a whole separate art form.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in pop music, if you say cover, it's kind of always a little bit secondary to, you know, the music that you write yourself yourself.
Right. Well, now you do both. I mean, you write
true.
Your own music, and then you do these other things.
I love doing both things, and I think there are things that you can take from both worlds. And I've tried to put a career together out of it, and it's what I love to do.
We're speaking with Tim O'Andrus, the pianist and composer. His new CD is called Homestretch. It's his second for the Nonesuch label. You are a pianist yourself. Were you thinking of Franz Liszt when you wrote your paraphrase on themes of Brian Eno?
Correct, yeah.
Because he used to do the opera themes
exactly.
of the day.
That's very much the model I used, kind of in tandem with actually Philip Glass's symphonies on themes of David Bowie.
And Brian Eno. The Low and the Heroes symphonies.
Right, right.
And Eno himself, he did that series of variations on the Pachelbel canon.
Right, right. And I mean, there are so many examples of that. For me, it was kind of what I wanted to learn from that was kind of how to make an orchestra into sonic atmospheres the way that Eno does on his albums and also on the albums that he produces for other people. That's kind of something I've always loved about his work, is the sense of mood and atmosphere and how he really creates a physical space with just sound.
Well, let's hear a little bit from the record Homestretch. This is my guest, Tim O'Andrus, with Andrew Sear conducting the Metropolis Ensemble. This is just an excerpt from his paraphrase on themes of Brian Eno. Bit of music from my guest, the pianist and composer Tim O'Andrus. This is an excerpt from his new album, Homestretch, the paraphrase on themes of Brian Eno, This is the song By This River, which he actually did with the German duo known as Cluster.
You're much more well-versed in this than I am, apparently.
Well, now, these are records, you know, that I sort of grew up with. How did you come to Eno? Did you grow up with this stuff?
Not at all, no. I kind of got to know his work early in college. I grew up very much listening.
That would have been what, January?
Yeah. No, it's been with me for a good 8 or 9 years.
Okay.
So I've had a little bit of time to absorb it. I grew up listening and interested in almost purely classical music.
Hmm.
And it really wasn't until that time that I started to look beyond that and you know, made friends who weren't also classical musicians and things like that. And one of the things that I was given to listen to was Another Green World.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, it was I pretty quickly just devoured his discography. And that was also around the same time that I was really beginning to love minimalist composers. And the two seemed very much to make sense together. I could see a direct line. But yeah, it kind of, I think I might be the only person in the world to have gotten into U2 through Brian Eno rather than the other way around.
That's true. A lot of people know him as the guy who produces
exactly.
Coldplay and U2.
Well, the first time I heard Joshua Tree, it was just like, oh, this sounds like a Brian Eno record. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you grew up listening mostly to classical music. Was Eno sort of your gateway drug into pop music?
Not really. I think Radiohead probably was the thing that opened doors for me originally, because that was sort of the thing that you listened to if you were
in college.
If you were kind of interested in like alternative music, I guess.
And those guys were some of the members of that band, heavily influenced by contemporary classical music. The French composer Messiaen, for example. So have you done for Radiohead what you've done for Eno in terms of like sort of playing with their themes and stuff?
No, I mean, they're definitely an influence.
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of a special case because they've been so heavily embraced by the classical world and lots and lots of kind of various covers of their work, and
including
and Johnny
Steve
Greenwood,
Reich.
Right? Steve Reich and Johnny Greenwood himself is a pretty widely known composer in his own right now. So,
Tim O'Andrus is my guest here in the Soundcheck studio. Now, before you did this sort of paraphrase for the Metropolis Ensemble and Andrew Sear and yourself at the piano, you sort of did some simple arrangements of Eno songs. These are generally kind of covers, aren't they?
Correct, and sort of as a way, kind of like a painter would do some sketches of figures in a larger work.
Mm-hmm.
This was kind of my way to kind of get my feet on the ground and explore the terrain of these songs and just sort of see how they laid themselves out registrally. They weren't ever intended for public consumption, really.
But you're about to play one of them for us now.
I guess so.
This is Tim O'Andrus with his version on solo piano of Brian Eno's song Everything Merges with the Night.
Thank you.
That is Timo Andrus, the pianist and composer, live on Soundcheck with a version of the Brian Eno song, Everything Merges with the Night. Boy, for something that was just a sketch and not meant for public consumption, that's really lovely.
Thank you.
The up at the upper right hand, you know, the upper register of the keyboard, you do this sort of cascading thing, which is in the song, except
right.
You've got it kind of almost like a tape loop effect where it's following itself.
Right. The sort of Terry Riley.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the connection for me.
Okay. To the sort of the minimalist aesthetic
right,
that you were talking
right.
about before. You have written a piece called It Takes a Long Time to Become a Good Composer. Does
Correct.
It?
I guess I sort of need to explain myself with that title. Well, I think absolutely it does.
But there are lots of composers out there who are sort of defined by early works. You know, Rachmaninoff could never get away from that prelude that was so popular. And you know,
it's true. It's kind of an unfortunate truth about being an artist is that the thing that you become known for is the thing that you stay known for. That title, I have to say, is a little bit of a double entendre
yeah.
because it has to do with Robert Schumann's work and how people think less of him as a composer because he was a miniaturist and not a, you know, a big symphonist like Beethoven or Brahms, though he did write wonderful symphonies. And I've always thought that was kind of unfair to Schumann. So,
mm-hmm. All right. The performance and discussion tonight is at Housing Works Bookstore, Crosby Street. It's free, starts at 7 p.m. The new album is called Homestretch. It has this Mozart Coronation Concerto that you've finished and recomposed, has the paraphrase on the music of Brian Eno, and then Homestretch, which
right.
sounds like it should be about horse racing, but it seems to be more about car racing.
Car racing, yeah. And Homestretch was actually the sort of pull that this album formed around, because the two influences in the piece, main influences, were really Mozart and Eno. And you can hear the Eno specifically in the opening section, which is very static and atmospheric and very heavily indebted to that sort of ambient style. And it was actually written to go side by side on a concert with a Mozart concerto, so it uses a Mozart-sized orchestra.
The album features the Metropolis Orchestra, conducted by Andrew Sear.
Right.
Timo, it's been great having you with us here in the Soundcheck studio today.
Pleasure to be back, as always.
Thanks. This is Soundcheck.